Translation: such satisfaction with one's standard of living is due to deep-rooted attraction for body, wife, home, children, animals, wealth, and friends. In such association, the conditioned soul thinks himself quite perfect. Purport: the so-called perfection of human life is a concoction. Therefore, it is said that the materialist, however materially qualified he may be, is worthless because he is hovering on the mental plane, which will drag him again into the material existence of temporary life. One who acts on the mental plane cannot get promotion to the spiritual. Such a person is always sure to glide down again to material life. In association of so-called society, friendship, and love, the conditioned soul appears completely satisfied. We'll do text 7 also because it's very much related. Sandeya manasavanga esham udvahanandina karotya viratam mudho duritane durashaya. Translation: although he is always burning with anxiety, such a fool always performs all kinds of mischievous activities with the hope which is never to be fulfilled in order to maintain his so-called family and society. Purport: it is said that it is easier to maintain a great empire than to maintain a small family, especially in these days when the influence of Kali Yuga is so strong that everyone is harassed and full of anxieties because of accepting the false presentation of Maya's family. The family we maintain is created by Maya. It is the perverted reflection of the family in Krishna Loka. In Krishna Loka, there are also family, friends, society, father and mother. Everything is there, but they are eternal. Here, as we change bodies, our family relationships also change. Sometimes we are in a family of human beings, sometimes in a family of demigods, sometimes a family of cats, or sometimes a family of dogs. Family, society, and friendship are flickering, and so they are called asat. It is said that as long as we are attached to this asat, temporary, non-existing society and family members, we're always full of anxiety. The materialists do not know that the family, society, and friendship here in this material world are only shadows. And society, friendship, and thus they become attached. Naturally, their hearts are always burning, but in spite of all inconvenience, they still work to maintain such false families because they have no information of the real family association with Krishna. Yesterday, Varanai Prabhu asked me to give the class. So in the afternoon, I just took a peek at the Bhagavatam to see what the verse would be. I thought, oh no, it's another verse on household life. So many verses like that. And I thought, I'm a sannyasi, you know. I failed in the household or ashram by Krishna's mercy. And what do I know? What advice I can give? And then later on in the evening, my brother's daughter called me. Braj Kumar is my brother. My disciple. His daughter called me, and she's pregnant, and she's overdue. Like 4 or 5 days, she was overdue. So she was in anxiety, and she called me up, and she said, Maharaj, could you give me some advice? I'm going to have a baby soon. I'm thinking, here we go. I was hesitating to give a class, and then she's calling me up and asking me for advice on, you know, what to do when she has the baby. I said, I don't have a clue what you're supposed to do, but I guess you should chant Hare Krishna. She said, well, it's really hard. So I said, well, anyway, ask your mom. Anyway, that's all going on, right? So I was thinking, you know, oh gosh. And then last night, I went to bed late, actually, because with the festival, you know, went late, and we got back. I got back about 11, and I was doing different things. And so at midnight, my brother's wife calls, and she said, well, you know, Saraswati's gone into labor, so we want you to pray for her. You know, I said, okay. So then at 3 o'clock in the morning, they call back, and she delivered the baby, like really quick, like really fast, you know. So, you know, we're all excited she had the baby, and, you know, what time is it there? And I thought, oh, my gosh, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you know. So, you know, like all night long, I was giving advice on householder life and, you know, delivering babies, you know. And now I'm giving class. Are there any questions? So anyway, this verse and this, these two verses in the Prabhupada's purports here are actually, if you listen carefully, a very strong condemnation of family life. Actually, a very strong condemnation of family life and the result of that attachment. Prabhupada quotes that verse. Pum sha stariya mituni bhavam tayor mito hridaya granti moho. Ahog vikseta satapta vitar janasi mohoyam aham ameti. I know this verse. That the attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. Based on this misconception, which Hridaya Grantim, it ties together the hearts of the male and the female, one becomes attracted to the body, to the wife or husband, to the children, to the home, to the household paraphernalia. And this one, in this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. So it appears that this affection that we have on the material platform for each other, which I guess you call that sex life, attraction for the opposite sex, this is the very root cause of material life. Krishna says it is lust only, Arjuna, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy in this world. Because when a man and a woman meet because of strong material urges, desires, they're only associating really for the purpose of sense gratification, be it gross or subtle. However, this verse does not condemn real family life, because really Krishna consciousness is all about relations, loving relations. And Prabhupada very quickly points out that in the spiritual world, that's the real family life. You couldn't get more family than, you know, Krishna Loka, where Krishna is the most beloved child. And Yashoda and Nanda, the most perfect representatives of parents. And then there's the extended family. There's all the brothers, and, you know, there's the sisters, and there's the uncles, and there's the aunts, and, you know, the nephews. And they're all described as, you know, exalted, liberated souls. What are they doing? Sitting, each one of them is sitting alone in some kunja, some place in meditation? No. They're all engaged in very deep, rasic, loving relationships as family members. So therefore Prabhupada said that this material world is the perverted reflection of the spiritual world. It's like the opposite. You see the banyan tree and then you see the roots of the banyan tree. So this is the perverted reflection of the family life there. Actually, what we're all hankering for is that. But because we falsely identify with the body and we're not enlightened spiritually, we think we can be happy satisfying our senses in these temporary relationships. So again, this verse does not condemn real family life, which is family life in the spiritual world, loving relations where there's no selfish motivations. Anyabilasita sunyam jnana karma narvitam anukalena krishnu shilanam bhaktir uttama. This is the Paribhasha Sutra. This is the seed verse of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That verse from which all the other verses are coming. Like in Bhagavatam, the Paribhasha Sutra, the foundation verses, Ete Chamsa Kolo Pumsha Krishnashtu Bhagavan Swayam Indriya Vyakalam Lokam Vidayunte Juge Juge. Ete Chamsa Kolo Pumsha. All the above mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions, but Krishnashtu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna, Shamsundar Krishna, Vrindavan Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. All these incarnations appear in the world whenever there's a disturbance created by the enemies of Indra, the Asuras. So the whole Bhagavatam evolves from that seed verse. So the whole Nectar of Devotion, the whole Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, evolves from the verse Annabilasita Sunyam Jnana Karma Navitam Anukalena Krishanu Shilanam Bhakti Uttama, which is really Rupa Goswami's definition of pure devotional service. How it's freed from any selfish desires, and it's most importantly, it's done, it's performed in such a way as to give Krishna pleasure. So that applies to all aspects of Krishna consciousness, and mostly to relationships. And that we see in the spiritual world, there's no tinge of any selfish motivation, it's all for Krishna's pleasure. So family life is there, but there's not a tinge of selfish interest. The gopis, who are the greatest lovers of Krishna, they would sacrifice their everything for Krishna's slightest desire. We gave the often told story of Krishna's headache the other day. That must have been told thousands or millions of times. But we all know the story, how Krishna had the headache, and he said only the dust of the feet of his devotees would alleviate it. So Narada Muni went everywhere, and devotees knew it was an offense for their feet to touch Krishna's head, so they wouldn't give. But gopis would give. Even Narada reminded them, you may go to hell for giving the dust of your feet. So if Krishna's headache is relieved, we will go to hell. So not a tinge of selfish interest in the family life, in the spiritual world. But as Prabhupada points out very clearly here, that very strong material motivation in mundane relationships which culminate in, you know, marriage. And therefore, we see that in modern society, 3 out of 4 marriages end in divorce. Well, Bhagavatam speaks strongly, but the facts speak for themselves. So this life, this verse is strongly condemning family life, but again, it doesn't condemn family life which is centered on Krishna, Krishna consciousness. Grihamedi means those who come together for the purpose of material enjoyment. Grihastra means those who come together to serve Krishna. Actually, Grihastra Ashram. What does ashram mean? Ashram means a place where the student lives to serve the guru. So real family life means that all the family members, the wife, the husband, the children, other relatives, are all serving Krishna. It's an ashram. An ashram is a place of learning. An ashram is a place of purification. An ashram is a place of spiritual awakening. So you have brahmachari ashram, you have vanaprastha ashram, you have sannyas ashram, you have grihastha ashram. It's a very elevated concept. It's a place where the men and women come, and then later the children and the extended family, for the purpose of serving Guru and Krishna. It's an ashram. It's like you walk into an ashram. I was in Orissa recently, and I walked into several ashrams in the forested area. They're all very pure, simple, but very devotional activities going on, and everything centered around service to Guru and Gauranga. It was a very uplifting experience to walk into a pukka ashram. Or you go to Gurukul Swami, Bhaktivedanta Purna Maharaj's little corner of Mayapur Dham. He has his ashram. It's elevating to go there. But if you go to the home of a serious grihastha couples, you also feel enlivened. You also feel uplifted, because the center of the home is service to Guru and Krishna. The best example, of course, was set by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was an exemplary householder. I think he had something like 12 children or something like that. And he was working as a government magistrate under the British rule. He was a very busy man, but a prolific writer in Krishna consciousness, a great preacher. He opened up so many centers around the eastern part of India and inaugurated the worldwide movement of Krishna consciousness. He was a householder. And one day he said, "One day I saw my house transformed into Vaikuntha." Because what were the activities going on in any devotee's life, be he a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasi, what's happening? Shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, shmaranam, padasevanam, archanam, bandham, dasyam, sakyam, atmani, vedanam, the ninefold process of devotional service. So we can understand that household life, strict household life, centered around service to Guru and Guranga, can be favorable. And that we can understand because it begins with the Vivaha Yajna. It begins with the sacred rites of marriage based on the Vedas, and it starts with the fire yajna. Svaha. Svaha. All auspicious events begin with the performance of the Agnihotra, fire yajna. Actually, marriage itself is one of the shamskaras. There are certain shamskaras that are to be performed at different stages of life. Like you see a stick of bamboo. Really, what is it? It's different knots, right? There's different knots on the bamboo to give it strength. It grows in such a way that it's quite a fragile thing, actually, bamboo. But it's hard. You can have a bamboo cane, it's hard as a rock when it dries out, because it, as it grows, it becomes strong at one point, then it grows a bit and it becomes strong, and it grows and becomes strong. So as it's getting bigger, there's those knots there which give it its strength. So the acharyas compare the shamskaras like that. At certain significant points in your life, you perform a shamskara, a purificatory rite, to give you the spiritual strength to make the next step. That's what shamskaras are. We need to do that because this material world is a very contaminating place, so we need a lot of spiritual strength. So the first shamskara is performed even before the child is conceived. It's called Garbhadan Shamskara. Garbhadan means the womb, like we have Garbhadakshayi Vishnu. Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, he comes into the womb of material nature, because the womb is dark by nature. So Garbhadan Shamskara, the living entity comes into the dark womb of the mother, the dark womb of material existence. So to give him a head start, the parents perform the Garbhadak. It's a very actually elaborate ceremony, and because in Kali Yuga we don't have the patience or the mind control or sense control or purity, then Prabhupada, our grihasthas, they chant minimum 50 rounds of japa, which purifies the mind. So at the moment of conception, the mind is elevated and attracts a great soul. It's a science which has been lost, actually. People don't know the science. It's like if you have a very nice restaurant. We have our Govinda's restaurant. So it attracts a certain caliber of people. If you have some low-class diner, greasy diner, we say in America. And what kind of people do you get there? You only get like low-class people. They come into the restaurant. So to come into the womb, if let's say the mind of the couple is elevated, they're elevated souls, they'll attract an elevated soul. Like Bhakti Vinod Thakur, towards the end of, not the end of his life, but as he was aging, he could see that he'd done all this hard work and rejuvenating Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement and establishing and making something acceptable amongst Bengali gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, even in the eyes of the British. He was worried, who will carry on this work? So he decided to have another child, and he actually prayed to the Lord, to Lord Chaitanya, please, you send someone from your personal camp to carry on this work. One of your camp de aides, someone from your personal entourage. So history has it recorded now that that personality was Srila Bhakti Sananda Saraswati, who carried on. And Prabhupada said there are actually families in India, generation after generation, they produce pure devotees. In his own father, he dedicates his Krishna book, which is a summary study of the 10th canto, which you could say is the most important canto. Prabhupada felt he may not live long enough to translate up into the 10th canto, and it shows that he didn't. He only translated a few chapters. And he was wondering, I will not live long enough, so he summarized it all in the Krishna book. Krishna book's very important. Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book introduction that this book, Krishna book, will give solace to my disciples when they're feeling intense separation from Radha and Krishna in the advanced stages of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada hoped that we would have reached the stage where we would cry tears of separation, and we would read Krishna book, and we would be appeased. Like gopis, when Krishna left Braj, the only way that they could control themselves was to reenact his pastimes, and by being absorbed in Krishna, by remembering his pastimes, they were somewhat pacified. That's how important the Krishna book actually is. Who did Prabhupada dedicate that monumentous work to? to his dad, to his father. To my father, Gaur Mohan Day, and he gives the date of his birth and his departure, who imbibed in me a sense of Krishna consciousness, which was later solidified by my eternal father, my eternal guide, master, Srila Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur. So there are families that produce, that's not a very nice word, you know. I produced a kid. It's like a factory or something. Not like that, it's much more personal, but it's a great satisfaction, I think, that when the grihasthas in our movement, their children grow up to be the Vaishnavas that we envisioned, you know, before they were conceived. That's difficult because Kali Yuga is, Prabhupada mentions here, Kali Yuga is such an age, but it is happening. Even if they're not pure devotees, they have that spirit of Krishna consciousness in the heart, and someday that it will manifest. So that's the samskara. It's because of the samskara the child is attracted like that. Then other samskaras, the name-giving ceremony, then you have the hair-cutting ceremony, and you have the first day they go to school ceremony. Right? All that, I don't remember all of them, but there's lots of them. But they give, and samskara actually means impression. Impression. Impressions are very important. They say, first impression is the most important. Impression. So what impressions do we have? In modern society, we're at the mercy of the material energy. There's so many mundane impressions in our heart. When we were children, we grew up in a materialistic society. So even in the practice of Krishna consciousness, so many materialistic thoughts come to your mind. Little tidbits of different songs, you know, that you can't get out of your mind. Habits that you can't give up. You know, you were a non-devotee longer than you were a devotee, so you have these habits, and habits, you know, hard to change a leopard's spots. We struggle for a long time in Krishna consciousness to overcome the bad habits. We sometimes become distraught. Will I ever? But it's possible. Sanatana Goswami says, as bell metal can be changed into gold by a mystical process, so a low-born person addicted to sinful activity can be turned into a pure puck of Brahmana Vaishnava by proper training and diksha. spiritual initiation can change. So we have all these impressions. Imagine if you were invaded culture, and you know your first impression was you came out of the womb, and the family was chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It's the first thing you heard. Ah, Gucci Gucci, what a cute little body. Baby, baby, here's some toys. In the back, and then your mother's always chanting prayers, and your father's making offerings, and you know you're eating prasad, and you know, for this merciless age, Kali Yuga, from the beginning, it's just all ignorance. So samskara means that those junctions, those important moments, those milestones in life, there's a purificatory ceremony. When you, before you're born, when you take birth, you can tell I went to bed at midnight. You take birth, and then the grain-giving ceremonies. All this is meant to create an impression. So what's one of the most important moments in life? Well, for most people, men and women, it's the marriage ceremony. Because, you know, in life, a boy desires a girl and a girl desires a boy. That's just the facts of life. It can't be otherwise. One time Prabhupada was speaking quite strongly against sex desire, and one disciple said, but Prabhupada, if there's no more sex desire, there won't be the human race. And Prabhupada said, yes, that's the point. But this does there so that it doesn't become a degraded thing, it becomes a refined thing, it becomes a source of purification. There's marriage. As Narada Muni advised Srila Vyasadeva, does not the thing which caused the disease, when used in a therapeutic way, cure the disease? The same thing that caused the disease, if you use it in a proper way, it can cure the disease. We gave the example of the day of milk. You drink milk in the hot season in India, you get dysentery. The cure for dysentery is milk which is heated in tamarind, and then you get dahi, you get yogurt. You take the yogurt, it cools the system, and the dysentery goes away. So the same thing which caused it cures it. So the same attraction that we have to this material world, which is entangling us, pum sha sturiya mituni bhavam, can, if it's done in a proper way, a religious way, according to Vedic injunctions, can purify. Grihe thako bhani thako, Narottam says. Whether one is a grihastha, whether one is a tyagi living in the forest, if their heart's desire is service to Gaur, to Gaurachandra, to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his missionary activities, if that is the desire of the grihastha, that's the desire of the tyagi, the renunciate, I want that person's association. Favorable association. Oh, we know these things. We've heard these classes 100 times. We have to hear again and again so that we remember Shmaranam. So men and women come together for serving, not the senses necessarily, but serve at the higher order of Guru and Gauranga. You could say, Prabhupada said, it's a concession for sense gratification, but not like gross sense gratification. Why get married to a woman unless you can have association? Why get married to a man unless you can associate? But it's a refined association in service to Guru and Krishna. Of course, these aren't the classes we should give to the brahmacharis. We have another class for brahmacharis, which is a lot different. But that's not the verse today, so we have to stick to the verse. Any of you brahmacharis who have any doubts, come see me afterwards. So how to have a successful grihastha life? Well, I don't know if I'm the one to answer that question, but from Shastra we know that the first and the foremost duty of the man is to give protection to the wife. Because Vedic scripture says a woman should always be protected, because there are many lusty men in this world. So a woman has to be protected so that she can do her dharma, she can practice Krishna consciousness peacefully. So in her youth, she's protected by daddy, because Sita was calling Pratapna daddy the other day. I thought that was, I don't know why, just daddy. So the girl's protected by her father till puberty, and then he entrusts her to a qualified man. He protects her, and then in the event, because of the material world, the husband passes away, then the girl is protected by her sons. She's always protected. So what it, when a man protects a woman, what does it mean? He builds up his arsenal of, you know, 38 magnums and Colt revolvers and AK-47s. There's a deeper meaning to protecting the wife. Ultimately, who can protect anyone from birth, disease, old age, and death in this world? You can't. But the man is actually meant to protect his wife from something even more sinister, and that's called illusion. Illusion means that we forget Krishna. And that is the result of all suffering. Because we chose to reject Krishna, to forget Krishna, we've come to this material world. And there's, you know, a whole variety of sufferings that you have to undergo from A to Z. Adiatmic, adibhautik, adidaivik. But really, why? Not because the government is like this, or not because, you know, my friend doesn't like me, or not because, you know, the real reason is you left Krishna. Therefore, you're subjected to all the miseries of material existence. So therefore, logically, we can conclude that if you go back to Godhead, there's no more problems. So all problems are resolved by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. But this illusion is very strong. It takes a lifetime or many lifetimes to become freed from the illusion. Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudurlabaha. Bhakti Sadhana Saraswati Thakur said the road to Braj is strewn with thorns and brambles. It may take some time. So the husband has to protect the wife. So how does he protect the wife? He protects the wife by being a very good example in Krishna consciousness. We always need that example. They say example is higher than precept. We have the philosophy, but we need the person to show us how to follow the philosophy. There's Bhagavat and there's person Bhagavat. There's the Bhagavatam, and there's the person Bhagavatam, the spiritual master. The spiritual master is the embodiment of the scripture. He demonstrates how to practice Krishna consciousness, and he should, within his lifetime, demonstrate the results of Krishna consciousness, because that's most convincing. On several occasions, I saw Prabhupada actually cry tears of ecstasy. In my young stage of Krishna consciousness, that's really what convinced me the most. I saw Prabhupada cry one time, like torrents of tears. He was sitting in front of us, and before giving Bhagavatam, he was chanting Jai Radha Madhava to Radha Parasishwara. And he stopped in one moment, his hands started trembling. I thought he was having a stroke. But then the tears were coming like this. I'm not exaggerating. And I think, my spiritual master is an eternal resident of Vrindavan. So come what may, in my lifetime, I'll always remain loyal to his lotus feet, because I know that hell or high water, we say in America, I'll stick with this process, because if I stick with him, then I, by his mercy, I can advance to the most elevated stage of Krishna consciousness. So husband is pati guru. He's meant to be exemplary for the wife. There's always, even in that relationship where there's more allowance for familiarity, there's still formality, because familiarity breeds contempt. Therefore, the husband always addresses his wife as the goddess of fortune. Not, you know, hey honey, sweetheart. No, Devi. So there's some respect there. And she always calls him Prabhu. Actually, in strict Vedic culture, the wife would never call her husband by his name. He was always Prabhu. And out of respect for his Krishna conscious wife, who was assisting him in so many ways, and also setting a very nice example. Ladies also could cry tears of ecstasy. There's so many Draupadis and Kuntis and Gandharvas, Gandharis and Sitas. You can always find a hero or a heroine in the Shastra that you can follow in their footsteps. The man is meant to set that example. For us that means good sadhana. Early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. And it's like we had a program late last night. That's no excuse for not coming this morning. We're going to give the sauce later. You will hear me screaming upstairs, all the tour. There's hardly any tour. My tour devotees are not here. So they're going to get the sauce. So, good example. To be concerned about his family. You have to be concerned about the greater family of man as well, because all the other ashrams are maintained by the Grihastha ashram. The brahmacharis, the vanaprasthis, and the sannyasis, they don't work. People, oh, I will join this movement now. They don't work, but their work, what is their work? The real work of getting back to Godhead. We used to get challenged on the street. Hey, go get a job, work. Hey, I'm doing the hardest work, sir. Daivyesha gunamayi. Mama Maya, Dharatiya, I'm trying to overcome the strict modes of material nature. That's the real work, sir. Get a life. A life of Krishna consciousness. So, but because they're not working like that, they're renounced and they're doing their bhajan. They have to be maintained. So who maintains them? The Grihasthas. They have to make a lot of money. So the sadhus are well fed, at least have the basic necessities of life. And the yagyas are going on. Yagya Vai Vishnu. Big yagyas are going on for the benefit of him. Who has to pay for all that? Money doesn't fall from the sky. They've got that famous picture of Lakshmi, you know, all the Hindu prince, and she's in this, money's, gold coins are coming from her hand. Well, yeah. It can be like that, sort of, if you're Ram. And the goddess of fortune by your side. So, Grihastha, he's Pita for not only his immediate family, but he's Pita Maharaj for the whole. All the renunciates are dependent upon him. And he has to open the doors when it's time for prasadam before he eats. Hey! If there's anybody out there who's hungry, come eat at my house, come eat at my table. There's some sadhus waiting for that invitation. You see, in Vrindavan, we have our Balaram Baba who lives near Bibi Govinda Maharaj's and Shivaram Maharaj's house. He does like that. He opens the door and that sadhu, I could see them, they were around the corner. Oh, just happened to be here and there. And he feeds 100 sadhus. But it's good for the Grihasthas because when the sadhus come into the house, they absorb all the karmic reactions that may be there. So be careful if you're a sadhu. It's not just the meal you're getting, you're also getting the karma. You have to be strong enough to purify it by your bhakti, by your devotion. Yes. And ladies, their duty is to remain loyal and chaste to their Krishna conscious husband. Actually, chastity is a woman's most important quality. If she's chaste to her husband, Krishna conscious husband, she'll also be chaste to her guru. And then she'll be chaste to Krishna. These other relations are meant to strengthen our relationship to Krishna. We learn how to serve Krishna through the Vaishnavas and through our spiritual master. They teach us the principle of service, which begins with loyalty. Prabhupada said, the first principle of love is obedience. So we learn these things in relationship to the Vaishnavas, to the spiritual master, and ultimately that all goes to Krishna. So a woman is chaste to her husband. It's said that the beauty of a cuckoo is its sweet notes. The beauty of an ugly person can maybe his scholarship. The beauty of a sage is his ability to forgive. The beauty of a woman is her shyness and her chastity, which is honored even by demigods. We know the story of Savitri, who was a young girl and she fell in love with a boy, and then the astrologer did the chart. It's not a good match because this boy's going to die in 12 months. And she said, no, what can I do? I've given my heart to this boy. I can't marry another boy. I gave him my heart. This is what a girl does. She gives her heart. So I have to marry him. So they had the yajna, and then 1 year later, Yamaraj came to take her husband. And she took him. But Savitri, because of her chastity, she had mystic powers. It's not that, oh, I don't want to be one of those shy wallflowers. No. That chastity in a woman brings forth her spiritual qualities. It teaches her chastity to the spiritual authorities. And if we're servant of the servant of the servant of the servant, we're in a very fortunate position. We get the mercy of 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 the Vaishnava. It's not demeaning to be a servant. Not demeaning to have these qualities. It's glorious. It's noble. So she followed, because she had mystic powers, she followed Yamaraj to the abode of death. She said, hey, give me back my husband. No, sorry, ma'am. No, I want my husband. I can't have any children without my husband. So Yamaraj said, all right, I bless you to have a son. Now get out of here. She said, Dhamaraj, you know that a chaste woman cannot have a son by anyone other than her husband. You have to give me back my husband. He said, ah, you tricked me. He said, no, because of your chastity, I give you back your husband. And so the husband was saved by the purity of the wife. It works both ways. She was saved. And actually, that the woman is like the fortress, because the desires are always there, and Maya is so evil that a man may, in his mind, he may even become attached to another woman. A woman may become attached to another man. I'm just speaking from, you know, not the Shastra, but the newspaper. But that would be adharmic. You know, we may want to do that, but it may not be in our interest, so we're faithful to the Shastra, which keeps us on the straight and narrow path. But if the wife is a good wife, loving wife and Krishna conscious, then the husband's protected. He's protected, and the wife is protected. They have that duty. It's something much deeper. Prabhupada once glorified such a woman. He was traveling on a train, because in the old days he used to travel out by train when he did his business as a grihastra. And he came up to the train stopped at a platform, and there was a man, a young man, but he'd been disfigured by an accident. I think it was a fire. His face was melted away. But he had a very beautiful, pretty young wife who was attending, Prabhupada said, to his every needs. She was accompanying him on wherever they were going. She was feeding him. And she was carrying all the luggage. And that made a big impression in Prabhupada's mind. He said, this is Krishna consciousness. That there's no question of divorce. But, you know, irregardless, once that vivaha yagya is there, we stick, that's dharma. So the woman was by his side, even though he was disfigured. So if the man is dutiful, and the wife is loyal and chaste, the marriage can be successful. Not that there won't be any problems. As long as we're not pure devotees, there's going to be conflict. And even when we are pure devotees, there'll be conflict because, you know, love in the spiritual world is also crooked. You read how Krishna is actually not married. He has all the girls are married, but he's paramour. You know, it's all pure and transcendental, but there's all these kind of crooked dealings, yavat, with Jatila and Kotila, and Radharani's married to Abhimanyu, who's actually the shadow of Krishna personified, but anyway. And they're trying to get out of yavat to meet Krishna, and Krishna's trying to get into yavat to meet Radharani. It's all crooked, but it enhances the leela, the feelings of emotion, of meeting again after so much difficulty like that. But the different thing here, because of material desires, there's going to be conflict. So you have to expect conflict in every material relationship where there's some remnants. So sometimes the husband and wife, they fight. But one sadhu, he said, Rishi shadhe aja yudhe prabhate mega gharjane tampatya kalhe chaiva parambe lagu kriya. Actually, that's Chanaka Pandit in Niti Shastra. The funeral ceremony of a sage who died in the forest, a fight between two goats, a clap of thunder in the morning, a quarrel between husband and wife, all begin in grand style, but the outcome is insignificant. So tolerance and patience are required for both the husband and wife to be great assets to each other. I was on the airplane last summer from New York to California, and somehow the seating was, you know, I came late, so I was sitting in the middle seat. And on one side was an old man, and one side was an old lady. And they were practically deaf. They were in their 90s. And they were going for their 75th, you know, honeymoon, or celebrating the 75th, the marriage festival. What do you call it?
Anniversary.
And Martha! It's just like right there, you know. Honey, we're going to go down the Long Beach, walk on the sands again. And they took hands over me, right? They're holding hands on my lap. Yes, John, I can remember that day as it was yesterday. You were handsome then, you're ugly now. They were joking with each other. And it was so loud, and I was trying to chant my japa. Back and forth. So then at one point I asked them, how long have you been married? They said, 75 years, young man. Like I'm 60, right? 75 years, young man. Wow. I said, how do you do it? So at the same time, they said with authority, young man, you have to give more than you take. And I thought, wow, that's a nice formula. You have to give. You have to be more concerned about not what you're getting, like our president in America, John F. Kennedy. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. So I often think that in a transcendental way. Ask not what spiritual master can do for you. Ask what you can do for the spiritual master. Ask not what Krishna can do for you. Ask what you can do for Krishna. Can I do something for you, Krishna? That endears you to the authority. Not coming and taking, but, sir, is there some service I can render? Yes, by the way, there is. Thank you very much. That'll get a thank you. If you have to give something, you don't say thank you when you give it. You say thank you when you receive it. And you're endeared when someone's giving you something. That's the nature of love. So, like that, in marriage, in any relationship in Krishna consciousness, we want to give more than we take. That, and then when we come to the point of only giving and not taking, that's anibhilasa tisunya. So that type of marriage is beneficial for the husband and wife. It's beneficial for the whole society, because from such a Krishna conscious marriage come Krishna conscious children, and we need them. Because of this varna shankara, producing children out of lust, there's so many unwanted children. Not that they're, yes, unwanted. Or not necessarily unwanted, but we don't know how to give them the proper upbringing which will satisfy them so they don't become rebellious later when they grow up. So you want Krishna-conscious children. We see what one pure devotee has done for the world. Imagine if we had a whole society. Like in that regard, Prabhupada said, my spiritual master created an army of sannyasis. I'm creating an army of grihastras. And we see that there hasn't been a lot of success in any ashram. Somehow we're all still here, but there are exemplary brahmacharis, there are exemplary grihastas, exemplary vanaprastas now. We have some of my godbrothers are traveling with their wives to different holy places, their kids are grown up, and they sold the house, and we see there are exemplary sannyasis. So we all have someone to follow at any stage of life. Life is a question of, you know, step by step, going through different stages. We should situate ourselves in that ashram in which we feel most comfortable for serving Krishna. No one should be embarrassed or humiliated. Every ashram, again, is an important step, an authorized step in advancing in Krishna consciousness. And this verse is about grihastha ashram. So if you're a good grihastha, you'll be making nice progress in spiritual life. And we need that example, especially in modern society. We need exemplary householders, because most people who come here, they are householders, and they need to know how to make their home into Vaikuntha, so there's not the anxiety and the stress, and it's a sanctified place where they can make advancement. And when they open the doors in charity, you know, they give dan charity, then those who come in contact with them will also become Krishna conscious. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Srila Prabhupada Ki Shri Shivara Gopinath Ki Gopimanandi.
So let us introduce ourselves.